Hello and welcome to episode 18 of the Poolside Pass podcast. On today's episode, I speak to Ian Wright, who is head performance coach at City of Glasgow Swimming Club. I'm going to be speaking to Ian about considerations for developing junior international swimmers, as Ian's got a prolific record of putting swimmers on junior international teams, as well as some senior international teams as well. Before we get into the podcast, just a quick line to say the Poolside Pass is fully supporting the Royal Life Saving Society's Drown and Prevention Week campaign. And across this week on our social media, you will find various posts about Drown and Prevention Week. We're encouraging listeners to be a lifesaver and to spread awareness of drown and prevention and the dangers of open water. Before we get into the main topic of the episode, here's a quick line from our sponsors, Streamlined. Become a qualified swimming teacher with Streamlined in as little as 6 days. Learn at your own pace and be guided by our expert tutors. You can do your training face-to-face, online in real-time, or a combination of the two. Assessment can be in your club using videos or attending one of our assessment venues. We offer tailored, high-quality support. Quote the Poolside Pass for an extra 10% discount. Okay, so I think it's about time I introduced Ian to the podcast. Ian Wright, welcome to the Poolside Pass.
Hello, how you doing?
Yes, not bad, thank you. Why don't we just start with getting a very kind of brief background on yourself in the sport?
Yeah, sure. Like many people you've had on, I think I started life as a swimmer. I wasn't a serious swimmer till mid-teens, really. I was really a once or twice a week swimmer at a very small local club in Yorkshire. And until about the age of 15, where I then was starting to enjoy it more and joined the City of Bradford programme. Mm-hmm. I'd improved quite a bit and I started making good progress. Ended up working under Coach Ian Avega, yep, at the City of Bradford for a few years. And did quite well, particularly on breaststroke. I was probably hopeless on everything else, but did a good job on breaststroke to some extent. Would make nationals, the odd national final here and there, some at regionals and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Went to York for university, and then I moved clubs and swam at York City Baths Club with Coach Paddy Garrett at the time.
Yeah,
for 3 years in York. And made good progress whilst I was at university as well. And both Ian and Paddy had a massive influence on me as a swimmer and my progress, and yeah, also my love of the sport.
Really, you know, yeah. And
they didn't tell me to go into coaching, but probably their influence on me in a positive way led me to think that coaching was something that would be good for me to go down. And I was definitely very passionate about swimming, I thought that would be a good way to stay involved in the sport.
Yeah.
So I went, prior to becoming a coach, I thought, well, I need to get my education of coaching up to as much as I can at this time. So I'd done some of the normal courses, teacher courses, coaching courses, yeah, and stuff like that. But I also made the decision to do a master's degree in sports coaching.
All right.
At the University of Edinburgh. So I went back to Bradford for a year, and then I moved up to Edinburgh to start that master's course. And my plan was to just stay there for the 1 year course and then maybe try and find a job in coaching. And I was obviously still swimming at the time, so I joined a club called Warren de Bath's Club in Edinburgh.
Yeah,
one of the more famous Scottish clubs, and swam with them in the, would have been the 95-96 season. Mm-hmm. Swam Olympic trials in the spring that year. Trials were sometime in April, I think, like they are these days. And not long after that, the coach we had left the club.
Yeah.
And before he left, he said, look, you know, not sure what's going to happen, but the club is kind of keen if you're interested in becoming the coach.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, right, okay. That's a bit different. I was still planning to swim. So I ended up speaking with the committee, and I was obviously quite young, only 23. And it was obviously an opportunity thrown my way, which I wasn't expecting.
Yeah.
So I thought, you know, I should jump at this and take it on. And that's what I did. I became, at first, I was just appointed as the coach of that squad. So yeah. I went from being a swimmer in the top squad at Warrender one day to immediately becoming the coach of that squad the very next day. Wow. So my relationship with all the people in that squad had to change.
Yeah, absolutely.
Overnight. Yeah. You can't change it immediately. You know, obviously it'd be a phase change and what have you. But everyone seemed to accept it. And most of the people in the group were younger than me anyway. And it was a good challenge for myself. And but it was a strange kind of jump into the world of coaching. I'd done a bit of helping out prior to that in various places at York and Bradford and even in Scotland as well. But I was kind of thrown into the world of full-time coaching quite suddenly.
Yeah.
And then after a few months, the club decided to make me the head coach of the whole program after I'd maybe done my probationary period, and they felt that I was okay and not going to ruin the club. Because I think they were, for me, I came quite cheap at that point in time, and they were quite financially struggling.
Yeah.
And it was a good fix for them, or so they felt. So I spent 13 years then at Warrender as the head coach. Built the program up. Took quite a long time to get back to where the club used to be, which was the top club in Scotland, and we built the program back up to that. And then in the run-up to the 2012 Olympics, I thought, well, this is the chance to, you know, there's different opportunities coming up now. The Olympics are going to be in the UK.
Yeah.
Is there any other opportunities? So I applied for a job in Stirling at what was then being formed as one of the new British swimming intensive training centres.
Yeah.
And got a job there working in that centre for Scottish swimming, but as part of the British swimming ITC.
Yeah.
Coach Doug Frost, who coached Ian Thorpe, was appointed as the head coach. And Rob Greenwood was also there as the assistant coach. So I worked with those guys, Doug, for a couple of years, and then he left. And then myself and Rob took that program on for a couple of years ourselves. And eventually an opportunity then sprang up. And I wasn't, again, anticipating it, but I was quite friendly with Nick Juba from Hatfield. And he obviously left to go to Denmark and be the head coach. And he basically said, are you interested in the job? And I was like, oh, right. Never really thought about that. And
yeah.
I was like, no, but I'm probably not. But then over a period of time of thinking about it and the situation, there was some difficulties within the situation in Scotland as well. But I thought, it's an opportunity, it's come my way, this door has opened. Sometimes you have to take a chance and walk through the door and see what happens.
Yeah.
So I went for that. Spent two and a bit years down in Hatfield, really enjoyed that time. I think I met you there, albeit not knowing it quite so well at the time.
Yeah, I think I swam in a few of your sessions when you came over and worked with us at Team Luton. I have actually been coached by yourself.
Yeah, not sure what you thought of that experience, but that was a good project that we were trying to get off the ground there, and I thought there was a lot of potential in that. I don't think it's still carrying on now, but that was good because Luton's a great pool.
Yeah.
And then I ended up moving back to Scotland in 2015 to become the head coach head performance coach, as it's called, of the City of Glasgow swim team, and that's where I've been since then.
So why don't we just get into a little bit about your role at Glasgow and how the program works there?
Yeah. I came in at 2015, as I say, appointed as the head performance coach to lead the whole program, albeit obviously there is a performance focus to what I do.
Yeah.
It's not really all about the development stuff, because there are a lot of other coaches who work within the program to do that as well. I've got some great assistants in the program, particularly Danielle Brayson, who's my main assistant, and Lewis, people like Lewis Smith and Heather Campbell, who do a great job for us as well. And we've got, I think we've got 10 at the moment, but we should, when the program is full, we would have 12 coaches working in the program, five of those being full-time or almost full-time, and then seven part-time coaches who might only be doing 6 hours or 10 hours or 14 hours a week. Mm-hmm. But they're all employed by Glasgow Life, which is the kind of essentially the leisure trust type organization related to Glasgow City Council. So we're all employed in that sense, which is quite good for job security. Mm-hmm. And like during this period of time at the moment, we're all still being employed to work and doing our jobs from home where we can.
That's good.
When I joined the program, there was about 250 swimmers in the program. So it's already quite a big program as a city program. But we've been able to increase that up to about, just before the lockdown happened, we'd got up to about 350 swimmers over that period of time.
Yeah.
In the last 4 years, increased it. I hope mainly by doing a good job, really. And some swimmers join us from other clubs, but we also try and bring people through from after they've finished lessons. We don't run lessons ourselves.
Yeah.
I'm not responsible for lessons programs. The council have another team that does that. But obviously, we link into them for lessons, and we try and link in with other private swim groups who do lessons as well. So that's how we bring swimmers through. I think we use five different pools. People will be probably familiar with Toll Cross, obviously. Mm-hmm. A lot of events have been held there. But we also use, there's another 10-lane, 25-metre pool in the city, on the other side of the city, that we use quite a lot, and another two or three pools that we use as well, just for the odd session here and there. So it is spread out. Whilst most of the programmes at Toll Cross, we do have a spread across the city, which does help people in terms of their travelling around the city. You don't have to just always get to Toll Cross. I think we run 72 sessions a week across the whole programme, which is about 131 hours of coaching.
Yeah.
Breaking it all down. So it is quite a big operation. At the moment, we're probably at capacity or close to that. So if we were to grow any more, we would probably need to try and work on finding more pool time and more coaching. And how we do that is a different matter. But, you know, we would like to still develop further, but we also want the quality to grow as well. I think, you know, 350 is a good size, you know, but we want the quality to get higher as well. The club itself, whilst the city back the program, they employ the coaches, they subsidise the pool time very, very well, to a very good level. Their investment in sport in Glasgow is second to none, really. It's extremely good. And we're very lucky in that regard. But we have the club, City of Glasgow Swim Team, is a separate club. It's a separate entity. It's a normal club itself. It has a normal committee. The local authority don't interfere in that. The club essentially there is the competitive outlet of what is the training program.
Yeah.
And you might be familiar with that yourselves. And I know one or two other places operate like that.
Yeah.
And the club does employ a part-time administrator and a part-time club development coordinator as well,
right.
Which are separate, but just purely by the club. So it's, you know, it's a good place. I love coaching at Toll Cross. It's great walking in there every day and into a nice facility, you know, because I appreciate in the past, I've not always had that, but it's good. And I'm very appreciative of that when I do get to coach there. It's a nice place to coach for sure. And I think, you know, people have often said, I think people in the past would say, oh, Glasgow should be doing better than it is. So, but, you know, every venue, every city, every program has things it needs to deal with that are situational to itself. And I think it was perhaps a big program, but not always heading in the right direction.
Yeah.
When we started, when I started there, and with the support we've had from the city and Scottish Swimming and the team of coaches, we've probably, I feel we've turned the ship around. It's taken a bit of time to turn the ship around, and we're now probably and hopefully heading in the right direction, but we've still got a long way to go to make it as good as we want it to be.
There's, like you say, those big clubs are a bit like oil tankers. They take a while to turn around. But
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly one of the ways I would describe it. It's, you can't just go in and you've got to work with people. You know, that's what I found anyway in my past. You can't just throw everything out and start afresh completely. There's some big risks in that, especially when you've got stakeholders and partner organizations which are funding the program, you know, and you're not in control of all of that support. So you've got to retain all that support, try and build it, and gradually change things around to the way you want to do things. And that's one of the thing I found quite challenging in Glasgow is getting that to happen. But, you know, it might happen a bit slower than I want it to, but eventually we are getting into the right direction and going in a good way.
That's good stuff. I think over the years you've been in coaching, you've worked with a handful of and you've worked with international swimmers at pretty much all the clubs you've been at. How do you go about setting these programs up to be able to produce those kind of athletes and dominate at regional and national levels?
I think for me, the first thing is to immediately assess where you are and then decide as a program or as a coach, head coach. And I've been lucky to be a head coach in all of the clubs I've been with. Stirling was slightly different, but in club programs, I've been the head coach. And the thing is for me to set out what level of success you aspire to. Mm-hmm. You know, where do you want to be? Make that decision first of all. You know, are you, and you have to take it one step at a time depending on where you're at. Yeah. When I went to Hatfield, they're already a prominent club with top level swimmers who are competing at British Championships very well. So the strategy there might have looked differently to the strategy when I started at Warrender or Glasgow, where particularly when I was started at Warrender, we were coming from quite a low point.
Yeah.
We had less than 100 swimmers. The finances were very tight at the time, and there wasn't in the some of the recent years there had been some success at the top level, but there hadn't been a high success of getting people to British Championships. So for me, it was like setting out right the British champ. That's where we're at. That's what it's all about. Whether that be the summer ASA nationals or the trials.
Yeah.
That was the target for me, and getting the club to buy into that philosophy. We don't just go for Scottish Championships, as can happen in Scotland, because you obviously have your own nationals.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Excuse me, but we for me, it was like setting it up. We're going for British champs. That's where we want to be, and that's what we're aiming at. So, you know, and getting the swimmers to believe that that's what they can go for.
Mm-hmm.
And like I say, it did take some time. But once we got the ball rolling, it started to grow and get faster and faster. I think one of the other things is to try and find, you might have one good swimmer or a few good swimmers, and it's in a sense trying to build the program around that, you know, and keep people together. You know, if I had a really good boy or a really good girl, you know, make sure that they weren't isolated as just a single swimmer, and they had some friends around them that they would train with, even if they were not necessarily quite as good as them. And then try and move those people through the club at the same time as each other, so that they're staying with their group of friends or their peer group as they progress through the club. Yeah. And I found that was quite important in terms of keeping the success growing, because then extra people come in and attach to that. And the number of people that you have who are doing well at that level kind of grows. And the people that aspire to, you know, if you have a particularly good swimmer, it can help raise the level of other swimmers as well in the program.
I think when parents take their kids along to a club to go and look at it, or such like. I think when they see a group of kids that like their child's age all getting along, working hard, being friendly together, it just makes the club so much more attractive in terms of getting the rest of the good kids then into the program.
Yeah. I think that word of mouth is very important. But to try and accelerate that process, another thing we've done, I've always tried to do, is to change something, create a brand, not just a club, you know?
Yeah.
It's something that you're buying into that it's more important than you. There's a tradition or there's a brand that's associated with your program. When I came to Glasgow, one of the first things I got permission to do was change the club logo. I thought there was some confusion of the colours of what nobody really knew what the colours of the club were. There was whites, there was greys, there was black and blues, and
yeah.
Everyone had different kit. So we made a decision, we'll change the logo, make it fresh, make it modern. Didn't change the colours, but we settled on what the colours were.
Yeah.
And things like that. And then try and build that. And obviously today, a lot of people do that around social media as well. But back at Warrender, I think one of the first things I did was get the club a website. And in fact, we were the first club in Scotland to get a swimming club website. So it was way back in 1996 or 97, and we started a website. We were the first team in Scotland to have one. So, excuse me, just finding little things like that to do, you know?
Yeah.
You have to promote your club.
Seems like a basic thing now, doesn't it, to get a website? But back then, perhaps not.
Yeah, but you know, today almost everyone, I guess, has Instagram accounts and Twitter accounts, I think you've got to, as a coach, you've got to stay on top of that, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
And as one thing, it helps promote your club, and it will grow your program. It definitely works if you do it well.
Yeah,
you know. And sometimes you have to find the people who'll do it for you.
Yeah.
You know, but as a coach, you've got to lead that process. What else have I done on terms of club programming? Well, I think finding good assistant coaches is really important. You know, sometimes you have to work with who you've got, but when you get the opportunity to recruit new people, you need to find the right people.
Yeah.
Doesn't always work for you. Sometimes you make the wrong decision, but as time goes on, you try and if you get good people, they will help bring your program on tremendously. And also, really important to get a good relationship with your committee. And particularly, I found it's really useful to have a strong relationship between the head coach and the treasurer of the club.
Yeah.
I found that has worked really well in the past. Make sure the coach understands the finances of the club, but also make sure the treasurer understands the direction that the coach wants to take the club in and what things might need to be spent to do that and how to go about raising the money to do that, you know. And make sure the club is... Because if you don't get your club financially stable, you're probably not going to be able to do the things you want to do.
Of course,
So I don't think you should ever leave that to other people. You've got to get involved in that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Anything else on that? I think as a coach, you've just got to be demanding and strict on your summers, you know?
Yeah.
It sounds common sense, but, you know, you've got to have a no-compromise approach. At the same time as being sensible.
Yeah.
And allowing people to live, you know, and appreciating that not everyone's going to be an international swimmer, and you're delivering an experience for people to enjoy swimming. But if you make it tough and strict, you know, I say to my coaches, if you were say to the parents, do you want a coach to be tough and strict, or do you want a coach to be slack and easy and let them away with things? Well, the parents and the coach will always go, well, better to be strong, tough and strict than the slack, easy approach.
Yeah,
I think that's important as well.
So, at these clubs, you've worked with kind of a lot of junior international swimmers and also senior international swimmers. How do you approach at the start of the season the kind of goal setting process with these swimmers?
I think I've always been one for having quite good plans in place for a season and weekly and breaking down my macro cycles and all that kind of stuff as most people do. However, I think especially if you're trying to plan long-term success and international success, yeah. You've got to start earlier than that single season. You've got to have a multi-year plan. Mm-hmm. You've got to think a bit more longer term as to where you want this 12-year-old to be in 4 years' time.
Yeah.
And you might not write all that down in a detailed plan, but you've got to certainly be thinking of what that longer-term picture looks like and where they need to be each year in order to get to that destination you want them. If you say this kid has the potential to get to the European juniors, well, that process can start at 11, 12, 13 years old. It doesn't need to start at 16, 17.
Yeah.
With some summers, you might find others who come through. Obviously, people develop at different times. So, some will not show that talent to you until a bit later, but for the really good ones, I think it's a multi-year journey, and you need to start selling that to them and their parents quite early, yeah. Especially when they start doing daily training of six or more sessions a week, and it becomes quite a serious, quite a serious thing. So I've always taken that approach, particularly with the good ones, and when they get to a certain point, maybe. They are starting to do well at a national level. Sit down with them individually and say, right, do you understand where we want to get to here? Do you know there's a thing called the European Youth Olympics? Do you know there's a thing called the European Junior Championships? World Junior Championships. These are things that we can now try and target for you, and you need to train towards trying to achieve. So bringing them into the process,
making them aware of what's possible.
Yeah, I've always thought it's been useful as well to, you might not share this with the athlete, but as a coach, I've always tracked the opposition of the athlete.
Right.
Who are my main competitors that I'm going to need to be as good as or beat in order to make a team for Great Britain?
Yeah.
And what standard are they at, and how quick are they improving? And are we on track? Are we falling behind schedule in terms of their development?
I think it's important to be aware of what the competition is, because ultimately you've got to beat them. But like you say, you might not necessarily share all of that data with the athlete.
Yeah, one thing I've always tried to say to the athletes though is, okay, you've got your year group, you're born whatever year, and often you compete with people in that year group. But if you want to be international, you've got to beat everyone in that group and actually beat the people in the year above you.
Yeah.
So we don't set our standards on the people in your year group. We set them on the standards in the year that's above you, because to make the Youth Olympic team, if you depend on what year you're born in, your only chance might be when you're the lower part of the year.
Yeah, because it's every other year, isn't it?
Yeah. And like European Juniors has expanded a bit now, but it used to be the same. If you want to make it a year down, I think you can make it 3 or 4 years down now. But you have to look at the people above you and say, well, I need to beat them, not just the people in my own age category. So going to nationals and winning the 14-year-old title is fine, but are you better than the 15-year-olds? Because those are the people who you might need to beat to make the team.
Yeah, so it's a very good point. I think it's always a good point to remember. There's no age groups when you get to the very top. When you get to senior level swimming, there's no age groups.
You've
got to be all to be mindful that eventually one day you're going to have to compete against people that are older than you, that are younger than you, and it all evens itself out in the end.
Exactly. I think, just from a technical point of view, I've always stressed as a coach and tried to develop well-rounded swimmers who are multi-stroke, multi-event, multi-distance. We encourage swimmers to race all events, all strokes, all distances, all of the time.
Yeah.
Certainly through their age group development. Not everyone does it, but certainly it's something we try to encourage. And the best swimmers I've had are the ones who would do that.
Yeah.
Even if they're not specialists in even if they are specialists in a particular event, making sure they still tackle other events as well, because I've seen kids who are terrible at butterfly at age 12. you know, barely swim the stroke, end up becoming national champion at age 18.
Yeah.
You know, so if you neglect it, a particular stroke, either as a coach or you let the swimmer neglect it, then I think you're doing them a disservice in the long run, because you don't know what opportunities might come to them in terms of medley swimming or even in that stroke if you haven't ticked those boxes early to make sure they're competent in all of the strokes and distances. So my training would always be geared around a combination, you know, this is for junior developing, a combination of speed, middle distance and distance, if you like. It's not, we're trying to keep everything open.
Yeah.
You know, rather than go down one road particularly early. Interestingly, we did I got Duncan Scott to do a Q&A with one of our group of swimmers during this lockdown period. And his coach, Steve Tigger, spoke about this as well. But one thing Duncan did was keep his training through his age group years very much 400 IM focused. And even now, he still trains, he pretty much trains medley.
Yeah, well, he swims medley at a world-class level, doesn't he?
He does. So, but people think, oh, Duncan 100 freestyle, you know, he was an Olympic finalist in 100 free in Rio. But that came off a 400 IM training program.
Yeah.
You know, so, and keeping everything open. And you'll even now, you'll still see him go to events and do a 1500. And all the different strokes and different events, and it's still part of his development to do that. Albeit when it gets to the very big events, he'll narrow down to the ones where he's got the best opportunity.
I think it's always good to keep your program as broad as possible with the swimmers as they're growing up, because it's surely better to be able to pick what your best opportunity is, rather than being restricted to only being able to do one thing.
Yeah, I mean, one thing, just as an example on that, was we've got a good swimmer in the program at the moment called Katie Shanahan. Did very well at the Youth Olympics last year and European Juniors. And coached by, in our junior, what we call our senior performance group, by Danielle Brayson. And Katie always does all the events. And we sometimes, and I've done this with swimmers in the past, but we went to a meet in Inverness, and we said, right, this is going to be a really challenging weekend for you, because you're going to do junior events, you're going to do senior events, you're going to do heats, you're going to do finals. And I think in the 2 days, she ended up doing something like 27 races.
Oh, wow.
And she was okay with it. She found it tough. You know, there's parts of it which she struggled through it, but we, you know, for me, it's like you over create the physical challenge, so that when they get to the international meet, and they might go to an international meet, be there for 6 days and only race once or twice.
Yeah,
you know, if you're going to relay and, you know, but so let's assume you don't just do once, but you might have two events and you swim a heat and final one day, and then you have 2 days rest and a heat and final another day.
Yeah, you swim four times.
The physical challenge isn't that difficult.
No, yeah.
Especially if you've prepared at competitions where you do 10 races in a day, you know, or three races in a session.
Yeah.
You have to be ready to do that. And if you go to an international meet, you might have your individual final. You might also be required to do a relay half an hour after that. You've got to be at your best for both. So it was like exaggerate the physical requirements in these domestic meets, so that when you go to the big meet where the psychological pressure might be higher, you're not struggling with the physical demands of the competition.
Yeah, so your body can naturally do what it does, and you can just focus on being in the right place mentally to deliver that.
Doing two races or three races in a day for your body is then no problem.
Of course, yeah.
You know, because you've prepared it to do a lot harder than that. Yeah. But you still see, and I think some people get that wrong, because you do see people who appear, anyway, to not be able to handle physically two or three races in a day, because they'll swim a really good time in the morning, and then they won't go faster.
In the finals, yeah.
Or in the final. Or they'll have two swims, and they can't back them up that well.
Yeah. I was always the culprit of that. doing a great heat swim and then not being able to re-deliver in the final.
Even in a 50 or 100, especially in the long course, that can, you can obviously never be quite sure as to the reasons for a swim, but part of that can be physical, that your body is not prepared to handle it at that level where the margins are so tight. You might want to be a tenth slower, but that could be the difference between losing out on a medal.
Absolutely, yeah. So talk me through now, kind of moving on from that, it kind of links in perfectly. Talk me through your planning processes then from a coach's perspective, having to plan for a swimmer to qualify and compete at junior international level. And I know this obviously differs for you know, if you've got swimmers going on different events, and it differs for each swimmer. So talk me through kind of experiences you've had where you've had to prepare swimmers to go to these kind of meets, but differently.
Yeah, I think for me, when planning that, what I call the key part of the season, when it comes to people who've maybe qualified for an event, an international event, but you've also got a group of swimmers who are going to nationals. And today it's perhaps more complicated than it's ever been, especially if you also have some open water swimmers in your group, and you've got also some para swimmers in your group who are at an international level as well. With these meets all being at different times, it becomes quite a complicated process to get everyone ready to peak.
Absolutely.
For when they need to peak. So I think really what I do is, for the national, people who are just going to nationals, they'll follow my kind of normal annual plan program that would, as a group, would take them towards that, which might become more specific for them as they go towards the meet in any normal way. But then generally their taper would probably start around about the same time.
Yeah.
And they might have an individual focus, but they'll be preparing as a group. For an individual who's going off to a competition, I like to give them an individual preparation plan for that.
Yeah.
That might, depending on the nature of the and the logistics involved, that could be anything from 2 to 4 weeks of a day-to-day plan and what every day would look like in terms of the amount of training they need and when their recovery should be and when their travel might be. And I would talk them through that. I'd create a plan and then sit down with them and say, this is what we're going to do, this is why we're doing it, and are you okay with it? Is there anything, especially as they get a bit older, are you comfortable with that? Is there anything you think is missing that you need to be in there?
Yeah.
And letting them have input into it. Mostly they seem quite comfortable with what I've prepared for them. But it's obviously important, depending on whether you're going yourself with them to the international meet or whether they're going off with the team.
Yeah.
I'm going to be working with a different coach. It's for them to, and you as a coach, to recognize that, and that the approach might be slightly different depending on those two situations. I think I've been relatively lucky over the period of time that when I've sent a swimmer away, they've always been put with a good coach, or a coach that I trust and get on well with already. But sometimes you need to try and influence that process as well. You might need to say to the head coach of the national team or whoever's organising it, so like, I think my summer would work best if they were put in that group or with that program or that coach.
Yeah.
You don't always get your own way. But sometimes you need to make those, at least have those discussions and talk those things through. Ultimately, though, It's vital to prepare the swimmer to be independent from you, whether you're there or not. I think at the international level, they have to be able to do the job. The job has to be completed in the training program.
Yeah.
They go away and they're ready to perform. They don't need you to be there. And it's important as you as a coach to get the swimmer to have that mindset, and for you to have that mindset that you can step away.
Yeah.
That you don't need to be in touch with them every day. Let them get on with it. You know, don't need to text them every day. You don't need to call them every day. They don't need to text you. You know, you just need to be sensible about that approach. You know, I've seen I think I've seen, you don't know everything, of course, but coaches who take a much too much hands-on approach in that situation, and they're trying to micromanage the process. You can't control everything, and you have to let the coach on the team deal with the swimmer.
Yeah.
Because they see, you have to do, they have to deal with what's in front of them, and you have to put some trust in that person to do that.
Yeah.
But you should try and always do that and have those conversations well in advance, because during the week of the competition is not the time to start trying to sort things out in that way. It needs to be all done in well in advance, and that everyone's on the same page.
I say often the best coaches make themselves redundant by making their athletes independent.
Yeah, absolutely. You've got to step out of the light and let the light shine on them, you know? Let them be the light.
So you mentioned there in terms of having kind of separate plans for those athletes that are maybe going off to represent their nation. What happens when you've got athletes that perhaps have set that target of qualifying for European Juniors, World Juniors, Youth Olympic Festival, and they just miss out when it comes to trials, and they've then got to kind of refocus and get back on and focus towards nationals? How do you kind of manage that process as a coach?
Yeah. It sounds like, you know, when you say it like that, it sounds like it can be a difficult thing, but I've never found it that awkward. You know, obviously there's maybe been a disappointment that a particular swimmer's not made what they achieved, but at the end of the day, you do need to refocus, like you say.
Yeah.
Probably you're going to be on the nationals, but there might be cases where it's not. It might be a different event.
Yeah.
Especially on your circumstances. For example, sometimes in Scotland, they might take a team as a Scottish team to something else around the end of July. You know,
yeah.
Sometimes they're out to the US Nationals or a different kind of meet in Europe, and that might become the focus instead, rather than the one that they were, the main international meet that the swimmer was hoping to get on. So, but either way, the process is probably the same. And I suppose I would try and encourage the swimmer to, okay, you still got your season to finish, you know, we still want to do well. And why not try and be, you know, your motivation now is to be better than the person who beat you to the team.
Yeah.
Whatever they do at the team, can you do better in your own focus and whatever that's going to be? I also think there's an opportunity as well, because sometimes when you're going away on a team, you might only be going for one race in one event or one relay.
Yeah.
Or if you're lucky, you'll get a heat in a final. You might be selected for one event only. Okay, some people are multi-eventers and they might get a lot, but most people who go on a team don't do as many swims as they would if they went to the nationals. Yeah. You know, so I think going to the nationals is the chance to say, right, actually I've got more opportunities here to shine in a different range of events. You know, rather than if I was on the team, I would be swimming the 100 free and the 100 free in a relay.
Yeah, of course. That's always a good way to look at it, turn it into a bit of a positive.
I go to a meet as a 100 freestyler, I might swim 500 freestyles.
Yeah.
If I go to the nationals, maybe I can swim 200 frees, two 200 frees, 250 frees, a 400 free. Maybe I do medley as well. So I've got an opportunity to move myself forward in a different range of events than I might otherwise have got had I been at the international event.
Yeah, I've not thought of it in that way before, but I guess it makes perfect sense. And like you say, it gives a bit more of a focus for them to be able to shine in a different range of events.
Yeah, and also I think you can also sell to the athlete that they're there to, especially at the nationals, contribute to the team outcome as well, not just their own outcome. That they might become a leader for you in that team, and they might be make a big contribution to the team's overall results. Whether that's, you know, if it's like a point score or a medal table, they can be a big influence for you on that and help the overall team to do a lot better.
Absolutely, because if they just missed out on selection for an international team, and then someone that did get selected for an international team are away with the national team at that point in time when it's nationals, you bet your bottom dollar that someone that just missed out is going to win quite a few medals at that meet.
Yeah, well, I mean, we in 2019, we had here at Glasgow, Mark Ford and Katie Shanahan go to the Youth Olympics, and that meant they missed the Nationals. Yeah. And I think between them, they won eight medals at the Youth Olympics, which is amazing. Did an incredible job, and you wouldn't want to take that away from them. But as a club, we probably lost out on 15 national medals.
Yeah.
that last year. So, you know, you can sometimes, if they don't make the team, then maybe you can benefit in that way, and keep that focus for them.
So, for those swimmers that do qualify for teams, and perhaps they might qualify, I think you said you've had a swimmer in the past that have qualified for European juniors, then they come back and go to nationals, and then they come and they've got open water, European open water, and then they might have world juniors. How do you manage that kind of process of them having to swim at multiple events?
Yeah. It depends on the specifics of each year and every situation. So it's almost unique. It's never going to be the same solution. So you've got to look at any swimmer in that situation, sit down with them and go through the detail of exactly what that is. And the logistics around it. Again, whether how directly you are involved, have you been selected, are you going with them, or is it in the hands of other people? What are the travel arrangements? How many different events have they got? I think when I was at Hatfield, I think Caleb Hughes had 1 year World Juniors, European Junior Open Water, and Nationals. I was, you know, some combination like that, all back to back, all pretty much within a 21, you know, day kind of process. He would be away and then straight from one to the other and straight from that one. Ended up at the Nationals, I think, as the last one in that year when he went. And we sat down early to plan that out, you know, and made sure he understood that there was a plan in place for that to happen. You know, we'd thought through all the different possibilities, and you know, he was a very resilient swimmer, and quite comfortable, able to handle himself, and you know, didn't find things too stressful. So, you know, but another swimmer, these things can be stressful for them. You know, they might find it just not the demands of the competition, but the demands of the travelling and the psychological effect of doing well or not doing well, and the impact
alone for that period of time.
Yeah. So again, that's another reason for in your preparation, making sure that you're trying to do your best to make sure that they are resilient and can handle these different types of situations. But when it comes to it, I think it's just important to have that individual plan and make sure they understand that it can be done. And often, there are occasions when I found sometimes the swimmer. What a coach might sometimes, or a team manager might, or a parent even might go, well, that's all a bit tough, and you know, what about this and what about that? Sometimes the swimmer isn't thinking like that. They're just going, oh, it's just what I do, you know.
Yeah.
You know, just let me get on with it, really. You know, they don't worry about travel. You know, they don't think traveling tires them out. And if that's their mindset, sometimes you just have to let them go with that. And not try and worry them that you need to do this and you need to do that. So there's a sense of not over-coaching.
Yeah.
You know, be sensible, take care of the basics, you know. But just because it's an international meet doesn't mean, and there's a few hours involved on a plane ride, it doesn't mean you have to dramatically change your preparation.
No, yeah.
The task... it's still the task of standing on the blocks and swimming back and forth up and down the pool.
Yeah.
You know, the task hasn't changed. And sometimes I think we are guilty of overcomplicating it and saying, oh, you need to have this, you need to have a pillow on the plane, and you need to do this, and you need to make sure you've got that at your hotel, and you all sorts of things that the swimmer they're not worried about. They just want to get on with it.
Yeah.
They can handle things much better than sometimes you think they can. So sometimes it's a case of get out of your own way.
Yeah.
And tell other people. Sometimes you have to tell other people to do that as well.
Yeah.
You know, just let them do it. They can handle it. And on most occasions, I've seen people, they the good kids, they rise up in those situations. They don't fall down. They can handle them. They are tough. They're resilient. And they rise to the occasion.
Yeah.
And sometimes the bigger the challenge, the more they can perform.
Yeah.
So let them do it. Don't put barriers in the place which don't really exist in their mind.
Yeah. Yeah. Stop putting up barriers when there's nothing there, I guess. I think.
Yeah. Don't worry them unnecessarily. But I mean, in some of the points on your question, you need to plan it out, obviously. I think it's important in those situations, particularly, especially if you're asked as a coach to be involved in the program of the international event, you've then got to make very good use of your own assistant coaches. And you've got to, you know, I've been in occasions where I've been away from nationals with one swimmer at an international event, but I've got 20 swimmers going to the nationals.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes the club is not that happy about that, or the parents are like, well, why are you going away with one swimmer when you've got 20 to look after at the nationals? But that's where the value of your assistant coach comes in as well.
Yeah.
And you give them the empower them to and trust them to take that on, and you have to sell that's totally fine for everyone else in the program. And again, when I've been in that situation, it's always worked well. But you need to have good people around you and good support programs in place to make sure that happens.
Absolutely. I think often now we end up with World Junior Championships happening kind of nearer to the end of August and almost near the start of the next season. How do you manage to kind of prepare a summer for that? Because often a lot of programs tend to reduce their hours through August. Summers around them in their training group might go off and for a period of time away, have a regeneration period of time. How do you manage to keep them really focused on being able to deliver at a key meet?
Yeah, and again, it also happens quite regularly with the para events for us at the moment. You know,
yeah.
They tend to be after what your other events would be, and so you, it's important. And for me, the first thing is to make sure the swimmer understands that they're in a program where whatever they need, we will facilitate them to get that.
Yeah.
Even if the program is shutting down because it's a holiday, you know, season, and that's what the program needs to do. Because there's 200 kids who need a break, well, they're going to get their break. You know, we're not going to run training for 200 kids but you know, we'll find a way to make sure you as an individual get the program you still need to have. Now, that might be within our program, and it always comes down to depending on the dates and the timing, you know, exact dates. In some cases, it can work out. Luckily, you know, I've had people recently with para events would go to Sheffield for nationals, and their international para meet might be maybe 2 weeks after, but we're on a break. So, but then we'll say, okay, liaise with the national centre. They go over to Manchester, train there for a week with the national para centre coaches, and then they just join the team process from there. So that might be a solution. It might be a solution that you join up with other people in your local area. Like in Scotland, if there's maybe two or three swimmers who are going away for that World Juniors or whatever the event is, or maybe they can get together as a group of two or three and go look, either, you know, two go to one and, you know, they live with each other and find the training, because your program might have it and the other program might not, or vice versa, you know. Or you might just have to run individual sessions for them. And again, that could be you, or it could be an assistant coach, because it's important that the coaches get their break as well.
Yeah.
At some point. Now, you might delay your break and take it later. Or you might still have to have your own break. Depends on your personal situation, you know. If you've got a family and kids of your own, you sometimes you can't change when you're going to have your break, you know.
Yeah,
but that's, again, it comes back to finding those people around you who can still support and make sure your program delivers for that athlete who's got that individual training that still needs to be done. you know, I've sent people away to other clubs to train in that situation where I know that, you know, I've built a good relationship with the coach to do that, and vice versa. People have done the same with me. They've sent their summers to train with me when they're in that situation, if we were still running training programs. In Glasgow, we're quite lucky in a way if that happens for us now, because we can access the pool pretty much any time. Yeah. There isn't going to be a period where all the training is cancelled and we can't get into the water. You know, if we need to get people in, we can get people in. It doesn't matter whether the rest of the club is off or it's at a different time of the day. You know, we can access the pool for whoever. And we now phase our summer break as a club. Usually, anyway, it's a little bit different depending on every year, but we usually phase it. Maybe the bottom half of the club will have their break first, because they don't go to nationals and they finish their season a bit earlier.
Yeah.
So they might break in July. And obviously Scottish summer holidays are a little bit different to ones in England. And then the upper third of the club might then have their break, and then the very top end of the club might break after that. So we started taking a phased approach to it as well, so that usually there would always be some coaches in the program who are working, and we're not all off all of the summer, all of the time.
Yeah, that's a good way to approach it. I just want to speak now more a little bit quite specifically around a certain kind of thing. The Scottish Commonwealth Games that happened in 2014, when you was working at Hatfield. You had a swimmer, Katie Armitage, qualify for the team at a young age. I think she was, 17 at the time?
Yeah.
And yeah, she ended up making a final at home games. This must have been, you know, not something your average 17-year-old gets to experience. How did you manage to kind of help her negotiate through that experience?
Yeah, it's a good question. Katie did a great job, and she hadn't. Interesting thing for Katie was that she hadn't had the typical kind of development program that a Scottish kid who ends up on the Commonwealth Games team might have had. Katie had Scottish eligibility through her mum, her mum's place of birth. Mm-hmm. And her mum was an international swimmer in the past herself, so very high level swimmer. So she didn't kind of picture a Scottish eligibility, because it had never been an issue until kind of maybe a year or two out from that games, where we were talking about, look, you know, you can make this for Scotland, you know?
Yeah.
So she registered a Scottish, and that became the target. It was never going to be easy to make it, but she did make it through the trials process, made it on the team. So once that happened, I was quite keen that she then got embedded within and trying to pick up some of the things that she might have missed out on in the past, having not been through what the Scottish Development Programme would have given her. So we went on a camp, you know, with the preparation then started. It wasn't just about how do you cope through the games itself. It was about getting her ready for that in terms of the psychological readiness. I wanted her to meet people who she was going to be on the team with before she went there. I didn't want her to turn up in Glasgow or in Aberdeen for what was the short holding camp and not know anybody.
Yeah.
So I ensured we went on a training camp, and we went to the Mare Nostrum meets in Europe. We went kind of on her own, but she was with Team Scotland people at the same time. So it gave her the chance to meet them. We trained for a week in Sabadell with a group of the Scottish swimmers as well. Not all of them, but just some of them. So she would get to know some people. She'd get to know some of the coaches, some of the staff, and that everyone wasn't going to be someone brand new to her when she went.
Yeah.
Also, the coach that she was going to be working with during the games, I made sure she had an opportunity to work with them as well. I knew that person well, and you know, trusted them to do a good job for Katie, and made sure Katie had built a relationship with the coach before she went there as well. So again, it wasn't a brand new interaction, and they both had the opportunity to get to know each other first. Yeah. And all of that was obviously just designed to make sure that she was more comfortable in the surroundings when she went there.
Yeah.
The second thing was that Hatfield had, in essence, four swimmers who were involved in the Commonwealth Games that year. Right. Adam Brown, who obviously trained in America, but he was still a Hatfield member for many years. He's still considered part of the club. He swam for England. Katie swam for Scotland. And we had two other young girls who swam for the British Virgin Islands.
Yeah.
As well. In fact, they were the first ever swimmers to represent the British Virgin Islands at the Commonwealth Games. So we, and my assistant coach, Samir Ahmed, he went with them to the Games as well.
Oh.
As part of the British Virgin Islands. And I went, you know, as a spectator, essentially. So the point of that was to make sure Katie knew there was other, she wasn't on her own.
Yeah.
There was other Hatfield were there as a strong contingent. There was four Hatfield swimmers taking part. There was a Hatfield coach on deck for her if she ever needed that. Not that that would, in essence, be required, but if she ever felt there was someone she needed to go to, that was,
yeah,
opportunity was there. I was going to be, you know, in the stands watching, so she wasn't going to be on her own. But also, from a technical point of view, I made sure she understood the situation. She was going in to swim essentially 100 breaststroke as the third ranked Scottish swimmer going into the event.
Yeah.
And she ended up coming out the number one ranked Scottish swimmer in the event, which then helped to get onto the relay, of course. So
yeah,
it was important she understood that situation beforehand, and that she needed to race not just for herself, but she had to race to beat her teammates in a way in order to try and get
the relay
selected for the medley relay, which ended up coming fourth at the end of the meet on the last day. So, you know, and missing. There was a couple of DQs. I think there were six. They ended up fourth. You know, it was quite close to getting a medal. But she needed to understand that beforehand. So we thought, you know, not just thought it through, but talked it through,
yeah,
all the scenarios in advance that she could do that. But when it came to it, you know, having done all of that, I hoped that that was enough. You know, and then I could, you know, I was then step out of the way and let her and the team coach got on with the job, really, at that point in time. And Kate is a very single-minded and tough swimmer.
Yeah.
And, you know, although she was, it was good and she was important for her to understand that that support was around her, she was able to then go into the environment and just race confidently and produce a personal best when she needed to.
Absolutely. I think it just kind of hammers home the importance of preparing for an event long before it's on the doorstep, not just getting a week out and thinking, all right, we need to do this, this, and this. It's having that kind of long-term plan into the event that happens even prior to qualification, where you're thinking about qualification and things like that.
Yeah, it's really important to think. I think no matter what the situation is, that's why I said at the beginning, start that process quite early. It could be you're thinking, as a coach, you need to be thinking years down the line,
yeah,
for your swimmers, and trying to create the opportunities that are going to help them maybe 3, 4, 5 years away, and put those in place now. And then when they make the team, you might have 3 weeks, or you might have 3 months or 4 months to get them ready. But it's not just a case of go back to your normal routine. It's what can you do between now and then,
yeah,
to help make sure that. And that might mean badgering the governing body for some support. It might mean you need to get some funding to take them away on a training camp, you know, to get that little bit of a, I mean, when we trained at Hatfield, Katie made that team and did most of that with training in a 25 meter pool, usually in an end lane, and a 33 and a third yard pool in the morning, usually in the middle of that.
Yeah.
Doing breaststroke with 6, 7, 8 other people in the lane, some of whom were Martin Walton and Caleb Hughes, swimming freestyle all over the top of her. And,
yeah. You know,
just getting on with it and not being not worried about that. And that in a sense, I think for her and a lot of the Hartford swimmers, has built a lot of toughness and resilience in them. And so you don't need a perfect swimming pool to get a perfect result. You just need to be focused and driven.
Absolutely.
And it showed me that you can, when people say, oh, there's too many people in the lane, I'm like, nah, there's a lot of people in the lane. But that doesn't mean you're not going to improve just because there's more people in the lane than you like there to be.
Yeah. So we're just gonna finish up the podcast. Now, normally I'll ask guests for kind of top three points on some kind of topic. I'm going to ask you today for your top three points on developing junior international swimmers. And I know you've only been able to whittle this down to four, so I'll let you have four on this.
Yeah. Sorry. So I was thinking this through and I came up with four things which I thought were all important to list. And some of which we've already talked about. But number one was to create and sell the vision early.
Yeah.
Not just in that year of it happening, but like I said, you might need to be talking these things through much earlier than that.
Yeah.
Target the year above you, not just your own year, and make those plans early and say, this is the direction we're on. This is the travel that we want to go on for you, is to get Youth Olympics, then you want European Juniors, then it's World Juniors, then it's Commonwealth Games, and we're on a trajectory that lasts many years. So, but start the plan and sell that vision early to the athlete, and also to their parent in most cases needs to be done as well.
Yeah.
And maybe even to your club. The second point was, and this sounds obvious, but I don't think it's what everyone does, it's plan your training to peak in the summer. That means you might, in a sense, deliberately underprepare for the winter championships or even the spring championships, particularly if you've got a particularly good athlete who can get through the qualification.
Yeah.
I had a swimmer many years ago called Lewis Smith, and he my plan for him was, we'll make the team, and the first time you ever shave down will be at the European Juniors. You won't have ever shaved down before that.
Yeah.
So it's like you're planning to make the big impact at the big meet. And I think sometimes we try and make the big impact, the big impact comes earlier, and then we can't repeat it in the summer. So I like to do things which are always geared for having the swimmers peak in the summer, whatever meet they're going to, whether it be just the Scottish Nationals or British Championships or an international meet. And that's one of the reasons why I always put our training camp in the summer. I see a lot of clubs do training camps in half terms in October and February, which is fine, but to get the most impact out of our training camp, we put it in June. So it has a direct benefit effect on the Scottish Championships, which usually come at the end of June, and a much more direct beneficial effect on the British Championships or the international meets that are coming up. So if we're going to spend money on a camp, let's spend it closer to where the big meets that we want the most impact from. Can you get the biggest bang for your buck, in a sense? So planning to peak in the summer. And I always say, if you swim short course in December, and it's more so with the developing athlete than maybe the older senior, but the time you go short course at winter should be the time you then aim for to do long course in the summer. So it's always about taking that, the progression doesn't stop earlier. It's always about the summer is the peak. Third point, and we've touched on this, but constantly look for and seek out opportunities that might help the vision be achieved. And it's on your job as a coach to do what you need to do, find the extra things that will help for you and the swimmer.
Yeah.
I mean, Bill Sweetnam used to say it all the time, but your experience as a coach has to stay ahead of the experience of the swimmer.
Yeah.
If the swimmer becomes more experienced than you, that's when you start having maybe problems with your relationships, because so you've got to get your own international experience in whatever way that might be. It might mean you need to get yourself on the team. You might need to go and travel for yourself and find out what's going on. learn from different people. But you need to keep yourself ahead of the summer as well.
Yeah.
Also create opportunities for them. I mean, one year the European Juniors were in Hungary. And so we said, right, the year before that, we said, we'll do our camp in Hungary. Let's go on a training camp in Hungary, find out a little bit about the culture and the somewhere we don't know about, what's it like there. And
yeah.
Just little things. I don't know if it had any impact, but little things like that. You might need to ask your region or your county or your governing body for support to do it, but you have to fight the battle where you have to get,
absolutely.
You know, and not everyone does it, but it's really important that you do fight those battles to get the little bit extras that you can. People go, oh, well, why didn't my son get that? I was like, did you ask?
Yeah.
Oh, well, no, but, well, why didn't you ask, you know?
Yeah.
You don't know you won't get, you know, if you don't ask. So, and fourth was, and I think this is really important, we mentioned it earlier, but prepare the swimmer to be totally independent of you.
Yeah.
You won't always be with them. They need to totally manage themselves without you or without reliance on whichever coach they're with. They need to be able to go away, no matter where it is, and not rely on having to have a coach tell them what they need to do on how to swim a race.
Absolutely. Great 4 points. I think definitely justified letting you have four rather than just three there, because all four of them were really important in developing junior international swimmers. Ian, thank you very much for your time. It's been great speaking to you. I certainly learned a lot, and I hope the coaches listening did too.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
No, you're very welcome. Listeners, thank you.
Good job. So, you know, just a good job. I wanted to say well done to yourself for running these podcasts. They're really good, and it's a good thing that you're doing, you know, so keep it up. I know people are enjoying them.
Oh, thank you very much. Listeners, thank you for tuning in again. Hope you enjoyed this one and learnt as much as I did. Just want to take this opportunity to point you towards our website, www.thepoolsidepass.com. If you like the podcast, share it amongst other coaches. Check us out on social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at The Poolside Pass. Until next time, keep learning in whatever way you can. Keep coaching.